Hi, I'm Lisa McEwen.
And I'm Lisa Anita Wagner. And together, we are...
She's Gotta Have It! Exclamation mark! For little time. Hello, and welcome to yet another episode of She's Gotta Have It!
Exclamation mark!
In which we talk about episode 2 of season 1 of Californication, called Hele Woman. Alright, shall we dive into what we want?
Yes.
I can go first if you want, or...
Yeah, you go first.
Alright. I could choose a number of different things, but honestly, like, what I really want this week... is to stop eating late at night, because I find that I am tempted to, because I am a hungry person and I get hungry and I need food to keep going. And sometimes I do end up doing bits of work at night, like reviewing student drafts or writing theater reviews. And when I'm doing that stuff, or even sometimes when I'm not, I'm just tempted to have a snack. And it makes my sleep less good. It makes me feel less good. In the moment, I'm really tempted to eat it, but then I'm always glad if I don't, because I think I sleep better and I sleep longer. So that's what I really want to do this week, is to just like get better at doing that, because I think in the long run, I end up feeling better if I don't.
Self-care.
Woo-hoo. Trying to get better at adulting, being responsible. With myself.
Lovely.
Which is sometimes like the boring self-care, you know, like making yourself do bureaucratic tasks.
Yeah.
And trying to force yourself to not like watch a million hours of Netflix, because maybe you'll feel better if you actually just do something else that's productive. So.
Definitely.
That's my boring self-care want of the week.
Well, what I was thinking about was, and we discussed this a little earlier upstairs, I remain in this flare-up that feels like it's been going on for like 100 years. I don't even know. It just seems like it's been going on and on and on. And I was thinking, actually, that I just wanted a new form of expression about it. So I think I did start a blog before, but it never really took. I sort of put little ideas. But I was thinking about playing around with, like, yeah, writing in words about how my days are. Because, like I said, I'm almost sick of hearing myself think it. And I feel like I just want to find a different means of expression, of being able to work on it that doesn't involve me telling myself or my friends every day that I still just have a lot of symptoms and stuff kind of sucks for a lot of days at a time. So yeah, so again, I don't know for sure, but I feel like I want to like write it out kind of blog style. And then I did sign up to The Mighty, because I thought that could be a good place to submit it to.
What's The Mighty?
It's a website that publishes articles from people with lived experience of mental health and different disabilities. And they're always really interesting. I found a lot of reading about folks with Ehlers-Danlos and different experiences, but I remember feeling really good reading about, I actually forgot what profession she was in, but a professional that did a lot, but sometimes would have to go down to halftime. And then she said, sometimes I just can't write. Sometimes I just can't do stuff. And just to hear different people and how they kind of deal with stuff.
Yeah. And I think that there's a need for that. Like, I just personally have a lot of friends who have conditions of some kind that mean that they have to constantly, they're in this sort of spectrum that's on a wave, in which sometimes they can be productive and sometimes they're really limited, and it's really hard to kind of figure out your expectations for yourself, and also just ways of telling yourself that you're not failing if you're just in a more limited mode.
Yeah. No, I've thought about that a lot. I think last week I talked about reframing this in a certain way, but I guess I felt like this last week again, even though I feel like I have skills and I can sometimes feel like I'm really good at being in this space, I felt like I was at a real loss, and I just thought, maybe another mode of expressing it might help. And I'm not a writer. I feel like I'm not bad at words, but I don't feel like writing is my métier. But I just thought that might be a good, way to just express it in a different way.
Yeah.
Mine is also an unusual one, but I feel like I want to connect with writing out my experiences of what a day is like. Yeah, I guess also this, just this, the storytelling. Like, if I want to talk about this, how do I want to put it forth to the world?
Mm-hmm.
While I'm still figuring out almost like what the problem is, like why I can't still do stuff. So yeah, anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right, shall we?
Californication. Did we get the opening?
Initial thoughts. We did not, but I can kind of grab it quickly.
We are now grabbing the opening.
Becca invites Hank to Karen and Bill's house for a dinner party with some mutual friends, including Marcy and Charlie, who is Lisa Wagner's favorite on-screen couple, or was at one time. After he arrives, however, he realizes that Karen has planned a little setup for Hank with a Scientologist friend of hers, which doesn't thrill Hank all that much. But he gets a nice laugh of it after the rest of the party. People walk in on him and Sonia in the bedroom. That's a weird way of describing that scene. Hank also gets a little news about the job he recently accepted. Yeah, it's mostly right.
Yeah.
Yeah, do you have any initial thoughts?
I guess just my initial thoughts. After watching the pilot last week, I also, like you, I remember thinking Mia was kind of an annoying character, but now I'm so fascinated to really watch her because I do think she's actually a pretty cool character and she really does a lot of stuff her own way. Yeah, and then in this episode, I started to see more of what I remembered. But you know, when you watch something a long time ago, I remembered all these really great things about Hank. And then in the pilot, I was like, oh, he is actually still quite the D-bag.
Yeah.
And then today I started to see evidence of that, where there's like, he's fooling around with the woman that's got the baby crying. He's like, go to your baby. But like, not in a dick way. Just like in the kindest, most lovely way.
Yeah.
And I love that that's like the surprise, the kind of surprise stuff about him.
Okay. Yeah. That's good. That's interesting. So there's like a couple threads there. Let's start with Mia.
Mm-hmm.
Because, see, here's what I find interesting about her that I was trying to explain in our last episode, and I'm not sure I did a very good job. So I'm going to try again. Which is that Mia represents, like, I think, I don't want to be somebody who's somehow, like, rationalizing men sleeping with underage women, because I just want to be on the record saying that that is wrong, and that once Hank finds out that Mia is 16 and he's like, this is never going to happen again, pushes her away to arm's length because it was wrong, that is the correct attitude to take. However, teenage girls that are about 16 or 17 are interesting cases because they're interesting cases of, like, what we consider to be, like, how old somebody needs to be or what kind of person you need to be genuinely autonomous. So, like, at what point do you have the kind of self-awareness and self-possession that you need to make decisions about what you desire and what you genuinely want in your life? But at the same time, at what point is somebody, like, still too vulnerable or developing as a person? And how do we kind of, like, parse these things? Because what's interesting about Mia is that she does seem kind of very, like, she seems very smart, she seems very funny, she seems very, in some ways, very confident, in some ways, very insecure. She's, like, an interesting mix of those two things. And she seems to kind of be going after what she wants kind of all over the place. And yeah, like there's an interesting way where you want to be able to respect the things that she says that she desires. But then there's also a certain amount of like paternalistic protection you want to kind of have in the mix, because sometimes we don't always know what's good for ourselves, and young developing minds, like I think, you know, teenagers, and I think even into your early 20s, you are still so influenced and so impressionable that it is extremely easy to take advantage of you, even though you might appear to be somebody who's very good at expressing assertively what you desire. And so there's a kind of interesting kind of, I think, tension there that coming down on the side of, like, don't sleep with Mia, Hank, is correct. But is this what I'm saying making sense?
Yeah.
I guess we want to, like, promote young women thinking about what they want and going after what they want and articulating what they want and feeling okay about that, even if there are definitely, like, lines that we want to draw on the sand about what is okay and what isn't okay. That's maybe the best way of saying what I'm trying to say. Because I think Mia's desire for Hank is legitimate and, like, is real, and you don't want to kind of patronize her by saying, like, oh, it's not real or you don't know what's good for you. But you also don't want to indulge it because she is so impressionable. And I think we see that as the series goes on, the relationship she has with her father and how that might be influencing some of the things that she thinks she wants.
I look forward to seeing it again because I have vague memories of it, but I don't remember it in that great of a detail.
So. Yeah, there's a school teacher that she gets involved with at one point, for example. Like, she's obviously, like, going after paternal figures very consciously. Yeah. in a way that would be very easy to prey upon. And then, anyway, we'll get to this in future episodes to see how Hank's approach to Mia manages to walk that line, I think, in a really interesting way, because I think he continues to just respect her as a person while also kind of acknowledging that sometimes she is trying to manipulate him, and he's trying to make her aware that he knows that and he's not going to be pushed around by her. So I think she's an interesting character to kind of keep watching. Yeah, do we want to talk about other ways that women's desire and sexuality kind of comes out of the mix?
Yeah, sure.
I feel like, yeah, Karen continues, and I think she will just be always kind of a prop figure. Like, the initial fantasy he has kind of does remind us, that's when he's in the car, he's waiting at the lights, and he's fantasizing that Karen is saying, like, come back to us, come back, your girls or whatever miss you. And it's like he really misses that very specific regard and what she means to him specifically. And it's interesting because I think a lot of toxic masculinity...
I'm so sorry, my body brain just popped open. I just want to do it quietly and not interrupt your speaking.
Okay. I will wait for you to finish. Yeah. So that you don't have to do a lot of gymnastic editing. Yeah.
All right.
They're sitting in the car and she's saying, Hank, come back to us. Like, your girls miss you. And it's obvious that, like, so that will be the MacGuffin of the series. Like, that's the thing that Hank is going after for the whole series. And it is a particular thing that he wants because it is like a kind of, it's not just that he wants Karen, it's that he wants to have his family back together. And I think that's kind of a shift from the first, literally from the first episode to the second episode. And it, I think, also then helps us understand that, like, Hank, I mean, while he ends up sleeping with a lot of women, he's not looking for it in the same way that a lot of toxic masculinity will promote, like men's rights activists or like pickup artists, is actually what I'm thinking of, where the idea is that they're just sort of addicted to their desire for a kind of feminine gaze to validate their masculinity. That's not what's going on with Hank. What's going on with Hank is that he is, like, in love with this fantasy of a family that he fucked it up. And we see at some point over the course of the next season or two, flashbacks into the family life, how it was before Karen and Hank broke up, how he couldn't quite keep it together, in part because he has got this romantic idea of what it is. And now that he doesn't have it, he wants it. And he realizes how much he wants it. And what Karen keeps pushing back on is that it's very nice that Hank has this, like, romantic idea of it, but he was never really prepared to deal with the banality of day-to-day family life. And so she's really skeptical that he can ever get back there, because she thinks that if they ever got back there, that he would fuck it up again. So, anyway, so he ends up kind of caught between this fantasy of Karen and his family and these women who he is actually, like, pretty, like... I mean, it's such a weird show because it's so porny in the way it depicts a lot of women. Like, they're so naked. He's, like, making out with this porn actress, even when he's sleeping with Sonya. Like, it is sort of, like, softcore pornography in terms of how it's shot.
And in this episode, two women just totes, like, stripped for him, like, in this, yes, like, complete, like...
Yes. Who was the first woman? There was Sonya who totally stripped for him.
And then I think who was the one that said, are my boobs?
That was the porn actress. That yeah,
was
the, okay.
So yeah, so both of them, because she was like, are my boobs big enough? What about my lips? Like, that was so painful to, like, watch someone talk about themselves like that. And I know so many people do.
But it reminded me also of, like, I Love Dick, because it's this idea that women kind of make themselves into parts because that's how they've understood how people see them.
See them, yeah.
And so it's like, is this part of me good? Is this part of me good? And like, Hank kind of, like, doesn't even relate to the question. And that's a very LA way also, I think, because of the culture that I understand. I don't know very much about LA, but I understand plastic surgery, for example, is more popular out there than it is in many parts of the world. It's more normalized to get that stuff done. And I think that's part of also what we're seeing with the porn actress is like, oh, what if I got this done? Like, I'm going to go get a hair appointment or something.
Yeah.
But even when Sonya strips for him, it felt like it had a different feel. because it wasn't like about, is this particular part of me good enough or is that particular part of me good enough? Like it was a bit more about something, like her reason sort of seemed a little bit more understandable. Like, yeah, if you were married to somebody for ages and then they left you for and told you that they were gay, like there would be a, and I kind of liked how assertive she was. Like, it was a little bit sad, but it was also,
yeah,
it wasn't pathetic. She was like, I'm feeling this way, I'm feeling really awful, can we have sex?
Yeah.
So
yeah, no, that was I guess it was actually just the speed. Like, I feel like within 3 seconds, both of those women were completely naked and then asking him about their body. But yeah, they were definitely,
which is definitely like a trope of the show. There's like, there is something that's like very, the show is contrived such that like these scenarios present themselves.
Also, I was just reminded of that scene that you just talked about where he's dreaming that Karen is saying, your girls miss you. Because I did read a little bit more about the manic pixie dream girl, and you said that Karen is a manic pixie dream woman. I actually just thought I understood that even more in that thing. Like, literally, it's like she is this like dream, do you know what I mean, that he's chasing.
Yeah.
And I thought that scene of him dreaming it. And then now I also see that she is more of a two-dimensional character. So it's just interesting.
Especially when, like, I think that the conversation with Marcy brings that out. Where Marcy's like, are you for real, though? And Karen's like, yeah, like, I'm gonna get married to him. And Marcy's like, Hank is resentful and jealous, but Hank is also not wrong that Bill is a bit boring. And Marcy sees that too. And that's the, she's trying to bring it to Karen from a different angle and say like, well, what is sex with Bill like? And Karen just sort of deflects the question and says like, well, it's just different. But it, like,
different. That doesn't sound good.
It does not sound good, Karen. Like, and just the way her face is when she's saying that, it really felt like she was like, not acknowledging the reality of it for herself. There was another point in the show where Karen and Hank are having a fight, and he said, you have to get in touch with your emotions, woman. And I thought, like, oh yeah, like that sounds exactly right. And, you know, I mean, after being, you know, together with somebody for 10 or 15 years, you might know them enough to be able to say that kind of thing. But I thought, like, yeah, he's not just being snarky. Like, he knows her.
I also wonder how that guy would be in bed. He looks like he wouldn't be good in bed, which is just, so it's like, poor actor, but it's sort of funny.
Yeah, I know. Well, I mean, maybe he's just a really good actor. He's really good at acting boring. Because I think I've seen him in something else. I can't remember what it was. It doesn't matter. But just to contrast Karen and her sort of wishy-washiness and her indecisiveness with people like Mia, right? Who, yeah, I mean, Mia is not really positioned yet to follow a lot of her desires, but she's sort of like a bit more kind of direct and assertive and chases after them in a way that I think, like, yeah, like, I kind of wish I was a bit more like that at 16.
Yeah, or like at that age, maybe you don't want her around, but she might make a really cool lady later in her life.
Well, yeah, I mean, like, this is a demographic that I have a lot of patience for. I don't think if I ever have children, I'm not somebody who would be awesome with small children. I think it's also just having taught 17 to 21 year olds for so many years, like 16's kind of in that bracket too. They're like almost adults.
Well, it's interesting. I was thinking back when I was in grade 9, my best friend, and she was 14, but she was dating someone who was 26, and he seemed like he was 100, right? So thinking back, so Mia's 2 years older, but like, and Hank is, looks like early 40s.
I would say 42.
Yeah, that's what it looks like to me too. So when I think back to that, like, he really would seem extremely old.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and my friend at the time was very excited to be, honestly, mistreated quite badly by this older guy who picked up a 14-year-old in a park.
She probably didn't perceive it as mistreatment.
Not at all.
Yeah. See, this is the thing, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So I am always interested in that story because, well, I was not into older men when I was young. I was very sexual when I was young, too. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. So it's just interesting different ways that can
Yeah, exactly. Look. Like, Mia is this interesting combination of, like, intense vulnerability and also just sort of like sassy kind of outgoingness.
And then she does some pretty bold moves with Hank's book and stuff too, right? So real boldness.
Yes.
Yeah. That's what I think I'm remembering it correctly that yeah. she like stole his biz.
Yeah.
So yeah. But I guess I am interested in folks that trailblaze, even if the trailblazing's a little weird, you know what I mean? Just yeah. for the notion of
yeah.
doing stuff. So
yeah, like I don't want to endorse what she does, but I do think that she's an interesting woman character that like you don't see a lot of that kind of thing portrayed in that way. There was a lot of discussion about pubic hair, and it was sort of interesting because Hank at one point disparages this social custom of going hairless, and in I think that's one of the lines in his blog entry.
Yeah,
where he says it would be nice to like see some pubic hair. That is like a thing I would like to see. And then on the other hand, Marcy's whole profession is exactly about that kind of aesthetic, like about waxing, giving movie stars bikini waxes.
Yeah, Brazilians she talks about a lot. That's true, right, yeah. Brazilians. Like, it is removing the pubes of Hollywood.
Yeah.
Yeah. I never thought about Marcy being, like, her job, and she runs that company, so she's got, like, a real connection to that job of
yeah.
tidying or removing the pubes.
And it's interesting, too, that... So, and Marcy's criticizing Karen for not having come to her for a... I keep wanting to say bikini wax, but it is Brazilian wax. And Karen's like, I never really was into that shit. I just did it to keep you in business. And Marcy's like, what? And so it's interesting that Karen is then positioned against all these, like, other women as, like, she isn't into that shit. And also, you never see Karen unclothed. She is always clothed.
In jeans and, like, floaty things, yeah.
In jeans and floaty things, yeah. That's her aesthetic.
That's true. It's interesting. I always thought of her because I think she's so exquisitely beautiful, but I never really noticed that before. She's never...
You maybe see her in a tank top. That's about as naked as she gets.
But no around the pool and bikini situation or anything, eh?
Nothing.
Yeah.
And so I think that's an interesting choice, like that they're kind of... Yeah, that she is kind of more held up as a bit of a Madonna character in a way. In that kind of manic pixie dream lady, right? She's the woman who's not getting naked for Hank.
Yeah, like the anti-LA lady.
Yes.
Covered with a big bush.
But she is sort of held up as one of the... She's held up as a kind of... I said Madonna, but I just even mean... She's one of the most important characters. She's one of the most sought-after characters. She's one of the women with, I guess, the highest status.
Yeah.
In the series. And... Somehow that, like, she is associated with, like, constantly being clothed in a way that I am just going to think more about.
Yeah.
I don't really know what to say about that right now, but...
Like I said, I've always really liked her. I thought she looked so beautiful and so cool. And it is funny because I would clearly dress more like her than other folks on the show. So I think it's also just that I, like, connect with her long hair and jean jackets and stuff.
Yes,
like that.
Exactly. I had long hair like her. I used to get my hair cut in that style just because I liked it so much. And wear jeans and floaty sweaters.
Yeah. It's interesting to watch something that I watched just as, like, fun and now really think about it and why I liked stuff.
I think the only other thing I would just remark on is Becca in this... Becca's story of how Hank and Karen got together at dinner and just how, like, adorable and romantic it is. And the way she still, like, at this age, I think, still really romanticizes her parents' relationship.
Yeah.
And then her discussion with her father later where she says, I read your book and I've seen your movie and they're not as different as you're pretending that they are. Like, she says something like, I'm paraphrasing a bit, but she says, yeah, your book is kind of about nihilism, but there is an underlying romantic streak in it.
Hmm.
And I thought that was really, it's probably insightful of her because he is, right? Like, we begin with that fantasy of his about Karen and Becca. It's like there is. Like he often pretends to not care about things or pretends to kind of not give a shit or being invested. But he is. There is a part of him that is. And there's like that's part of the tension within him throughout the show. Compared to the first episode where it's almost absurd how different the book and the movie look, right? Because the book is like a black cover and it's called God Hates Us All. And then the movie is like bananas, like it's just sort of like blue and pink and it's full of colors.
Park Bench.
Crazy little thing called love and it's got Tom Hanks and Katie Holmes.
That combo's pretty hilarious on its own.
So just the insight that Becca has into her father, I thought was interesting. And how much he cares about being a dad as well, even though he really falls down sometimes throughout the show in that capacity.
Well, that was what sort of got me too with that scene of like, go to your baby. I thought of that too. That's like partially because, I mean, I think he's a good guy, but he is also a dad.
Yeah.
So I think anyone that's sort of into babies, you can't really listen. You couldn't be having sex while someone's baby's crying.
Yeah. Yeah, that scene was interesting because it was kind, but it was also a little bit paternalistic. Like it was a tiny bit patronizing, but it was very clear that that character didn't find it offensive. Like she actually thought it was sweet.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought that was an interesting scene for that reason. Yeah. There's a lot jammed into all these episodes, man. And it's a little bit more scattered than I Love Dick. I felt like I Love Dick had a more of a kind of cohesive, like, it's obvious that, I don't know if it was driven by the book or Jill Soloway or who was sort of driving the overall arc, but it was really on theme each, like it was very mindfully crafted.
Well, I do think that's Jill Soloway. And I was wondering, cause I saw in the opening credits, this show was created by one guy. And I was actually kind of curious now, like, not that it matters in the show so much, but like where he's coming from and why he created it. And
yeah.
Was this from something else or was it just created as the show? Like, was there a book of it?
I think it was just created as a show, but we can maybe look that up. And
I was sort of curious about the fellow that made it after investigating it.
Yeah.
Because I really feel that it was me listening to Jill Soloway talk about the why that got me to really, really understand and really like I Love Dick as well. So... yeah, I guess I'm curious. It might not always enhance.
Or, I mean, yeah, maybe he... I mean, you never know with those credits, because sometimes, like, somebody comes up with the, like, pilot idea, and then somebody else takes over, but, like, it's originally somebody's idea, and they get credit for it for the rest of the series. So I'd be interested to look that up.
Yeah, and just how it came to be. Yeah. But I can see why it's appealing, especially the way it is done in this softcore, porny kind of... I think self-referential way, do you know what I mean? But it kind of works because it seems like everybody, it's for everybody. Like if you think Hank is like just a righteous player, you would like the show.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
And if you're like us, you still like the show. So I just feel like it's got a really broad spectrum, which I think is interesting when it works.
Yeah. Although I'm still going to come out and say that if you think Hank is a player, that you're interpreting it wrong.
Totes.
Yeah. Kind of like the people who think that Mad Men is about how Don Draper is really cool. You can watch that show and you can enjoy it on that level, but that level is incorrect. That's not what that show is about. But this is not our podcast on Mad Men yet, so... yeah.
Excellent.
All right, I think that's all I have to say about that.
Yeah, me too. I'm just going to keep thinking about Mia and Manic Pixie Dream Ladies.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm interested in, like, kind of thinking more about Mia, as she gets fleshed out as a character. She has a lot of nuance.
And it is interesting. I think she looks like she's in her 20s, and that's that big, huge girl. It doesn't matter. Do you know what I mean? But it is interesting that she just reads like a mature-er lady.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that actress probably is in her 20s.
Yeah.
But also, some 16-year-old girls look like that. Yeah.
I looked like I was 35 when I was 16. Like, I totally didn't... I could have... If I would have been so inclined towards that, I feel like I would have easily been able to, like, just... No, nobody would have known.
Yeah.
So I do think that's an interesting element in that whole faction of the story as well. So, anyway, for another time, but...
Yeah.
Californication. Another interesting title.
I think that's it. All right. Thank you very much, listeners, for tuning in to another episode. And we will be back next time with another episode of probably
Californication.
Yeah.
Or soon another guest.
Yes.
And now that we've said it,
we gotta get it.